An elven warrior trapped on modern-day Earth. Two friends with different destinies meet at a magical school. These are some of the stories we at Electric Lips Comics are working on. You can get your copies of both The Mana Chronicles and Tales of Mithril at elpmerch.com. Support independent creators. Explore the merch featuring exciting ELP Comics art with a wide range of designs. Electric Lips Comics. Imagination electrified.
Welcome to the Mostly Pod Out at Night. Mostly, I am Graveyard, joined by my co-host, Salem.
Hello.
This is episode 125 of our weekly All Things Horror podcast. We all understand the philosophical dilemma of being trapped in a room, a prisoner of our own making. But what if the forces keeping you trapped in that room are very real? Join us as we explore films that keep the protagonist trapped in a room. That's right. We are doing today Vacancy from 2007, Green Room from 2016, and VFW from 2020, which if you watch that movie, and we'll get into it, you would not think was from 2020.
Well, if you know who the actors are, you know their ages.
Oh, right. But yeah, well, like I said, that is the first time for us watching that. Both of us, and I can't wait to get into that. But you know, this is the last week of the month of Salem.
Yay!
I know you're excited to get back to our schlocky bullshit that we watch.
No, I'm not. Yeah, you started me off with horseshit right away.
Yes, but we'll get into that a little bit later. Do you want to talk about why this is your last week episode? I know this is one of your favorite kind of tropes, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's not quite as my favorite as, you know, I prefer, like, you know, the five characters in search of an exit. You know, that's that's kind of one of my favorite storylines. But I do like these kind of movies are good. But the problem is that you need really good acting to sell it, right? Because it's like you're looking at the same people being trapped in the same room for the entirety of the film, or most of the film, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if you don't have good acting here, it's bad. So there's a lot, there's some really bad movies in this vein, like no argument there. But when it's done, I think it's very good, because it's a very good kind of avenue to show suspense, show rising panic. You know what I mean? It's if you have good actors, it's a great way to display that, right? Because you really say it. If you don't, it's terrible, and it sucks because you have to watch the people in the same room for the whole time and you can't get away from them. There's no subplots. It's just this and that's it,
right? And it's interesting because I really feel like with this type of format, as you said, when it's done well, you feel like you're in there with them,
right? Yeah, for sure. Because it's, you know, the suspense is done well. The pacing is done well. You're like, you feel that suspense, right? You feel that kind of like, shit, you know, what are you going to do?
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like we also go into the idea of like, what would we do in that situation, right? That's the idea of an escape room, is that put you in that same mentality. You go, what would you do? And that's the scary part, is like, not a lot you can do sometimes.
Well, and that's another thing, is that, you know, people are like, oh, I would just do this, this, and this. It's like, it's a different story, man. Anybody who's been under intense pressure, you know, in a short time period, you know, like, oh, this thing is going to blow up. What are you going to do to stop it from blowing up? You have 10 minutes.
Right.
You know, like, you know, if you haven't been in that situation, you don't know how you're going to react. You know, a lot of people just freeze up. A lot of people panic. A lot of people, doesn't bother them at all. They can think normally. It's
right.
You don't know. And until you get in those situations, you don't know.
Yep.
And that's the big thing. That's why, like, you know, when you get like soldiers, that's why veteran soldiers are so like cherished, right? Because like, and I don't even remember the percentage anymore, but there's a large percentage of soldiers that you get them out of basic training, you put them in the battlefield, and they will just not even try to fight the enemy at all.
Yep.
They'll shoot above their heads. They'll hide. They don't want to, you know, again, they don't want any part of it because that's just how they react to it. It's not, I'm not saying that's wrong. I mean, it's, you know, you don't want to hurt other people. There's nothing wrong with that. It's, but it's, you know, that's not what they're training you for. That's not what they're putting you there for. So like, if they're putting in fresh people, it's a big unknown. It's the same thing.
Right.
So what do you have a veteran person that knows how to react? That's, you know, how, what they're going to do under pressure. That's, again, that's why that's the, get that big plus when they say it's like a veteran unit. You know that unit is going to do what you want them to do, or at least try really hard.
Yeah, yeah. And I, you know, we have done an escape room together, and we saw people freeze up in that escape room. They're just going, we don't know what to do.
Yeah, I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do. Like, well, there's, we got this little bitty piece of something, right? And like, there's got to be something there. So you got to focus on what you can do, not what is possible. Like, because that's, there's a million possibilities. There's, you know, a couple of things that you know about. Concentrate on those.
Yeah. But yeah, let's get into this. So I'll start off with Vacancy from 2007. And that's the thing about a lot of these movies is, you know, a lot of stuff happens, but you know, it's kind of also like you gotta watch it again to really fully appreciate all the little hidden details of these movies. But essentially, we open up with, Luke Wilson and his wife, Kate Beckinsale, as they're traveling how many hours away from their in-laws? Like, they're traveling at 1 a.m.
Well, yeah, I said, yeah, essentially, they were traveling home, and the wife fell asleep, and, like, the road was blocked off, so he decided to take a shortcut, quote-unquote shortcut.
Through Nowhereville.
And hours later,
yeah,
they almost hit a raccoon. She wakes up, where the fuck are we? And he's like, oh, we're here on the map.
No, yeah.
That's not where they were. Yeah, spoiler, that's not where they were.
Correct. And this is like, you know, I guess Garmin was around this point in time, but like pre any of that stuff. And your navigator needs to be able to read the map. And if you have a good navigator, you're fucked. Which they are.
Well, she was asleep. Right.
Yeah. So they almost hit a raccoon, which, you know, hit it, sorry. And then
they didn't hit the raccoon.
I'm just saying, I said they almost hit it, but if your choices are almost crash or hit a raccoon, I'm hitting the raccoon.
Wow.
I know. I'm a horrible, horrible person.
I'll try to avoid it. I mean, if it's possible, if it means death or like me going in oncoming traffic, I mean, you're right. I probably won't do that. But
right, I said,
if I'm on an empty road and nobody's around me, I will swerve. I will try not to hit it.
No, I'm just saying if you, that's what I said, is if you were in that situation, it's like, yeah,
you're a monster. Right. We all know now. Move on.
Correct. All right. So anyway, they kind of like, okay, we hear this kind of weird clunky noise, which I don't know maybe where that came from. But essentially, they run into like a gas station. Like, oh, these gas prices are so cheap. Well, we don't see how cheap they are. This is, you know, 2007-ish, and then they kind of have like it's like 1:15. The mechanic comes out. It's like, oh yeah, we don't got gas. We got gas, but you guys are good. Let's get you back on to the interstate. It's like, let's get you moving. So I'll check the engine for you. All right, you should be good to go another, you know, 30 miles to wherever. It's like, all right, cool. So they start heading down the road, and within a mile, their car breaks down completely. So they walk the mile back to that gas station area, which is next to a hotel. They go in there, and they hear a woman screaming, bloody murder, which at that point in time, you leave. But they didn't. And
well, I mean, it was obviously like coming from a television or something.
I know, but still.
Okay, well, then you wouldn't have any friends. Because that's if they true. Came over to your house, you'd be watching terrible horror movies and screaming and murder exactly. happening.
And anyway, they're like, okay, well, you know, they talk to the guy who runs the hotel. He's like, yeah, you know, the guy next door, he's not going to be available till 8 a.m. He's like, oh, there's a payphone out there. Here's some dimes. Cool. Oh, by the way, that other tow truck place isn't going to be open until the morning, so it doesn't need no good. Why don't you just stay here? They're like, oh, all right. It's like, okay, gave us rooms. Like, oh, you want the honeymoon suite? It's $5 more. Like, no. It's like, no, really, I'll give it to you. It's worth it. So they get into the hotel room, and of course, there's cockroaches kind of places.
There's one, and it's gross.
Oh, yeah. And they're like, okay, you know, we're going to sleep with our clothes on, you're essentially on the covers, not underneath them. And they're like, okay, this is weird, but let's just get through the night. We learn a little bit more that essentially they had a son, and the wife left the gate open, and he died. He got hit by a car or something. So their marriage is quite strained.
Did they actually explain what happened?
She said they left the gate open, and that's it. I don't know what that means. I don't know if he drowned in the pool. I'm assuming he got hit by a car.
I didn't even hear that much. Yeah, I got the fact that they had a son and they died, but I don't
know
if they just said what happened.
Yeah. So then, like, hey, let's watch these unmarked, you know, VHS tapes. Well, then, like, huh, there's people getting, like, killed. This is a weird movie. Then he puts the second tape in. Huh, wait a minute. This room looks familiar. Oh, shit, it's our room. And they kind of see a camera in the ductwork, right? Like, well, this isn't good. And they start kind of hearing, like, knocking everywhere and all this stuff, and they go to complain. It's like, yeah, there's no one else here. That's weird. I'll call the cops. We'll take care of. Nothing happens. And then they realize, like, now they're being, like, hunted, just like the people on the tapes. And they're just, you know, trying to figure things out as it progressively gets worse. You know, we see some stuff in the background, a guy in a mask, you know, sneakingly into their hotel room, right? But doesn't really do anything other than just kind of peers at them.
He puts the apple on the
sink. So they realize, like, oh shit, he has a way in. Where's that? Where'd you get in, right? So they're just messing with us. And then they kind of realize that, like, hey, this isn't cool. We gotta do something. You know, they try to, you know, call the cops, and the payphone just goes into, like, the hotel owner's phone. It's like, shit. So they get back into the room, and then a semi pulls up, and they're trying to get the guy's attention. Like, hey, there's someone out there. They're going to kill you, as, like, the two masked guys and the hotel owner kind of converge on him. And, like, he's calling over, like, oh, shit, he's going to help us. Nope. He picked up his box of tapes to watch. Cool. He's part of this. He pieces out. Just let me know when this is done. And so, you know, the stuff gets a little bit more violent and kind of crazy. And then they realize, like, wait a minute, we gotta figure out a way to protect ourselves. Like, we can't go through the window. We're too big. And there's no other way out. As Luke Wilson is kind of checking the bathtub area for, like, a weapon, he stands on the tub trying to get, like, the curtain rod down. Right. And he finds, like, a hollow floor and a trap door. He's like, oh, we're going to go follow this and see where this takes us.
Well, he figured it out because he was watching the tapes.
Yeah.
And he figured out that they were always coming out of the bathroom. And so that's why he figured that the secret entrance had to be in the bathroom.
Yeah, because they just appeared from the same spot every time. Like, they're not there, then they are there. Like, the only place there is the bathroom. Correct. So they go through the tunnel, and, you know, which is pretty well lit, I gotta say. They put a lot of time and effort into the
lights. Yeah, they did have light bulbs in there and stuff.
Yeah. Probably every, like, 2 feet was a light bulb. And they're just going there, and they get up, and they're like, oh, shit, this is going to, you know, the hotel manager's back room, where he's literally recording everything. And they're like, all right, well, let's try this phone, call 911. They call a cop, but then they realize, like, oh, the guy's coming back. So they crawl back in, and you know, the guy hears the operator calling. He's like, oh shit. And takes the phone cord and unplugs it. He's like, all right, they're out. We got to try to find them. Anyway, they kind of go back to the room trying to figure stuff out. And then a cop does show up.
Well, at this point, they don't go back to their room.
They go to a different entryway. Yeah.
They go to the gas station next door.
Yes, you're correct.
Because apparently there was another path off that tunnel that we did not see, or they did not explain in any way.
Yeah. But all of it's connected. Every room has an entry point and everything, to the gas station, to the manager's desk, all that jazz. All the rooms are connected too, with the doors all the way through, which I don't know if I've ever seen two doors in a hotel room, one on each side. But
what do you mean?
I usually have like two joining, and there's a space gap, right? They're not, I've never seen all the rooms connected through like one pathway.
Oh, well, I mean, that might have been why they picked that place.
Right. So I'm looking at them like, I don't know if I've ever seen doors on both sides like that. So, anyway, a cop does show up and they're trying to get his attention. They get out. He's like, oh shit, something's going on here. And well, poor cop gets killed because he's there to save the day. And that's what happens when cops come to these type of events. They get immediately killed. Right. So, they're realizing that this is just kind of, not good, right? They don't know what else to do. And so they kind of sneak up to, another room there. And they're like, okay, well, hey, we can get into the ceiling. Why don't you, go up here and hide, wife? And, we kind of like, they realize the marriage is okay, that he forgives her for opening the gate to unknown event for a child. So he's like, all right, well, I'm going to make it out of here. Everything will be okay. Like, well, as soon as you say that, something's going to happen. He goes to try get help, and he immediately gets stabbed and, collapses on the ground. So they're looking for her. They had, broken out the bathroom window of that room to make it look like she escaped. So they're trying to go find her. She stays up in the roof until daylight, comes down, and she's like immediately found out, but she makes it to, was it the hotel owner's truck with like the screwdriver and the ignition?
It was their old car.
It was their old car. Okay.
Apparently at some point they had gone and gotten their car, because the dude intentionally did something to it. So I'm sure they just walked up there and he fixed whatever it was and then brought their car back. Because there was a scene earlier where they were doing donuts with their car in the parking lot.
To show them
that they have their car.
Right. So anyway, she gets into their car and a guy attacks her, kind of going through the sunroof. And she goes and drives into the other guy that's there, pinning him against the wall. Mask falls off. And look, it's the mechanic from earlier, right?
Poor Ethan Embry.
Yes, poor Ethan Embry. And the guy in the sunroof also just is dead.
There's a high chance, yes.
Yeah. So anyway, she makes it back to, the manager's office, and he has guns up there. And she shoots him a few times. And kind of, after a fight, he starts, hitting her and trying to record all the stuff. Like I said, lots of back and forth. And then she gets a phone cord that he kept in his pocket and plugs it in and calls the cops. And she goes to her husband's body. And look, he's somehow still alive. And she's just comforting him while, she called the cops. They're like, we already sent someone out there yesterday. It's like, oh, never check back in, huh? So cool.
We'll get there.
Yeah. And the movie as they're waiting for the cops to come again. End of movie. I know I had seen this movie before. I want to say it wasn't in theaters, but it's probably right after it came out on DVD is when I last watched it. So maybe like 2008. But I haven't watched it since then. And it's an interesting room scenario that kind of gets into some like fears of like seedy hotels and stuff like that. Almost like a homage to Psycho in a way. Was kind of my first thought on this rewatch. What about you? Do you remember the first time you watched this?
I don't remember the first time. I don't remember when it was. Obviously, I didn't see it in the theater. It was some point after that. I honestly, I have no idea. I think I got it on Netflix back in the old disc in the mail days.
Okay.
But yeah, I don't know. I mean, yeah, the movies like this is why whenever I travel, I always bring some kind of weapon with me.
Mm-hmm.
I cannot sleep in a motel, like a strange motel, without weapons. I mean, I can't. I can't even sleep in my own house without a weapon, like, right next to me. I can't do it. I've been like that ever since I was a kid. Like, when I was a little kid, I used to have a bayonet from World War I that, like, one of my uncles had given me.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to sleep, like, under, like, not on top of the bed. I used to sleep, like, under the bed with that knife next to me. Like, even as a child. Like, I've always been like that. So, nothing new. But this just reinforced as to why, like, you know, it's essential packing when I'm going somewhere on a trip.
Right. And like I said, that makes sense. You know, as you know, I went into a CDS hotel, you know, like a year and a half ago. Then I'm like, I don't trust anything here. I did not sleep under the blankets. I did not have a weapon, though, and I wish I did.
I mean, the blankets are fine. I can't, some people like it, but like you get in those like hotel beds and like everything's like super tucked in and you can't like move your feet.
Yep.
No, that's like panic inducing. I'll like pull everything off and then like lay it on top of the bed and then I'm okay. Like, cause then you can move, but I can't do it when you're like super tucked in like that.
Right. You know, did you find anything new on the rewatch, or is it almost like watching it fresh again for you?
Yeah, basically the watching it fresh. I know I've seen it. Like, I knew what the point, I knew what happened in the movie. I remember that they were going to kill them and that they were taping it.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, I don't remember what happened. But yeah, no, nothing like shocking.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. I'll start with my highlights for this one. Obviously Kate Beckinsale.
Yeah, this is her prime. This is like when she's in her prime. When did Underworld come out? It was right around the same time, wasn't it?
I think 2002 was the first one.
Okay. Yeah. It was like that was that this was like Kate Beckinsale's decade. It was the first you know, decade of the 2000s was Kate Beckinsale's decade. Like, she was great just about everything she was in this time period.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I think that everyone was creepy as fuck and it worked well. Like, you met the hotel guy, you go, all right, there's something seedy about this guy. He's getting off really bad vibes, right? And, like, you immediately feel, like, that the griminess, too, of the hotel room. You know, they only had one cockroach, that's all they needed to kind of show everything you need to know about that room. Yes, the water was disgusting as well.
Yeah, but water is like that if you don't use the pipes. Right. If they're old pipes and you don't use them, yeah, they get rusty.
And I doubt it's city water as well, so it's water.
If you turn it on and let it run for 5 minutes, it'll be fine.
Yeah, right. But like I said, you know, just you immediately feel on edge as soon as you meet the guy and get into that room, right?
Yeah, so. I would not have. No, there's no way. I would not have done that.
So, like I said, the atmosphere though is just fantastic because you felt dirty. You felt like you've been in that hotel room before in your life.
I've gone on lots of road trips, and I've gone on lots of road trips with very broke people.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, yeah, we have to find like the cheapest ones. You know, the ones that have like, you know, $30 marked on their sign, and it's like there's a reason for that,
right? And you also realize I've been there too, where you think, is that a camera?
You know, I don't care. You want to watch my fat ass sleeping, that's on you.
But like I said, it just like it sets the tone, I think, really well. You know, and for a relatively small cast too, I think everyone did fantastic in this movie.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, obviously the manager, Ethan Embry, the other guy, we don't even really get to see who it is.
I don't think we do at all.
No, like he has a mask on the entire time. Yep. It never comes off. We do know there's a third person. We don't know who they actually are. They're just there. They're just one of the masked assailants. That's all.
Yeah. Yeah. So the acting was great. I think it was great too when the truck driver just came and got his tape of VHS's. Like, holy shit. Like, how deep does this go in this town?
Right. Yeah. This is fucked up.
Yeah. And honestly, I was quite surprised that both lived. I'm really surprised that Luke Wilson lived.
Well, maybe.
We'll get into that maybe a little bit more on the other side. how I feel that happened. But like, for both people to live and all, essentially all the assailants get killed, and you go, oh, vacancy two's out. Like, wait a minute.
Well, yeah, they're so traumatized by what happened to them that they have to repeat it.
Exactly.
But they have to be on the attacking side so that they feel better and in control.
Exactly. Exactly. So, those are my highlights. How about you?
So there's like terrifying things that happen to them. They tap into like real terrifying things. Like if you're in a hotel in the middle of nowhere, motel in the middle of nowhere, and like somebody starts banging on your fucking door like that, like banging on both your front door and your like adjoining door.
Yeah.
That's fucked up. I mean, like, that's terrifying. I mean, like, what are you going to fucking do? There's like obviously more than one person and they're fucking with you. Like, that's a very bad place to be in, you know? Like, I don't know who would be doing that, but they're all bad.
Yep.
All bad. Except for, like, maybe punk kids just trying to get funny. But, like, punk kids these days are not pranksters that they used to be. Like, they're just as violent. And so, it's like I said, there's no good scenario here. I mean, like, it's a fucking crazy move to leave those tapes in that room.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Like, the TV doesn't work. And they leave tapes of murders that happened in that room, in the room, for those people to watch and find.
Yep.
Like that slowly dawning realization of, one, this is real. Two, this is the same room that we're in right now. Like this, that's like that dawning terror of like, wow, we need to get out now. But that's their whole point. Like they're building that terror.
Oh, they're fucking with them.
Yeah. But again, like the movie does really well with building up suspense. It really does well with the pacing and how it like gets you there, you know, like it keeps kind of taking steps up, even as they're trying to like, you know, get out, even as they try to like, you know, they get some kind of advantage. It's always like, you know, steps keep, you know, being taken against them. Like, oh, this has all been planned for kind of thing.
Right. They eventually end up back into that room regardless.
Right. And yeah, like the cast is great. I don't, like I said, the only guy that you don't really notice is the guy with the mask that never takes it off. And I don't think you're supposed to notice him. He's just there.
Right.
Because I don't think it would have made sense if there was only two people.
Oh, yeah.
They could have easily gotten away, I think, if it's two people. I think that's why they added the third person.
Right.
That's it for my high points here. I'll roll into low points. Yep. Their relationship. Wow. Like, I wanted to punch both of them when they're in the car. Like, shut the fuck up. Like, you know, it's in the middle of the night. Bad shit is happening. Just stop fighting each other. Dear God.
It doesn't make sense to
keep fighting. It's like you're getting everybody's fucking, you know, your anger level is rising. You know, your logic is now overridden. You can't, like, think.
Yeah.
Oh, it's bad. Obviously, the cockroach, not good. Very bad. And the thing that here's the thing that I didn't understand. There's several things in this film I don't understand. But first thing is when they first understand what's happening to them, this is after they've watched the tapes. Mm-hmm. Right. So they know bad things happen in this room. They go and try to sneak out. And that's when they realize that, you know, the phone booth is rigged or whatever. Right.
Yeah.
And they have a chance to run because the guy is chasing after them and they run back into the room.
Yes.
They could have ran anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
They ran back to the one place where they are not safe. Because that's where all the other murders happen. Like, you got to figure that some of these other people tried to get out first.
Oh, easily.
Right? You know, so, like, why would you go back into that room? I would rather run into the fucking street and get killed in the street than run back in that fucking room. Because that's a bad idea. They're just going to keep fucking with you in there. But yeah, and then they find the tunnel in the bathroom, right? They know that a guy can pop out of this tunnel at any time. What does he do? What is the first thing he does when he finds that dark tunnel? He sticks his fucking head in there.
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh? What's down here? Like, if there's a person there, you just got stabbed in the face. Like, what are you thinking?
Oh, yeah.
You know, like, easily. Drop something, drop a towel down, anything to, like, you know, potentially stun a person down there. No, he just sticks his big old head down there. What's going on down here? Like, that's very, very stupid. Like, you should, yes. you should not do that. But again, like, police, this is why they have a dispatcher. Even rural cops, right? Mm-hmm. If your rural sheriff goes out to check on a call and doesn't call back in an hour,
you're sending someone else.
You're sending someone else. I mean, there's no way you're not. That's right. How police work. Like, you have to check in, especially if you say, oh, I'm going to this call to check on this thing, right?
Yep.
And then they go to check on that thing, and then you don't hear from them again?
Well, the dispatch was very annoying. Like, we already sent someone there.
Right. Like, this is rural town. Like, you only have, like, two police. You have, like, two people on the job. You know what I mean? Like, there's no way you don't notice that the one guy who's on duty that night is not answering your call.
Right.
Like, yeah, you might be sleeping because it's usually a slow night. But if he says he's going somewhere, like, there's a protocol. They check in. Here's what I'm doing. I'm heading back. I'm heading out. You know, whatever. Like, that's protocol.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it might be a rural area. They might be loose on that kind of stuff. But, like, I'm here. I'm leaving. A basic shit that everybody does.
Yep.
So, like, if they haven't heard from them in hours. Again, it's dawn when she calls. So it's been, like, 8 hours.
Yeah.
Like, and no one has come for this guy. Like, that's ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing is, like, I'm not surprised that he lived, right? I'm not surprised that Luke Wilson lived because he only got stabbed once. But the fact that the guy was filming him as if, oh, yeah, you're dying. Ha ha. Like, that's funny. I got it on tape. Okay. But, like, these guys have killed how many other countless people?
I mean, how many tapes are there? A dozen? Right. Two dozen? 100?
Yeah, I don't know. We don't know if those even all those tapes. Whatever. They've done it a bunch of times before, at least, right?
Right.
Because we personally saw, what, 4 different groups of people?
Yeah.
At least, so they've done it at least 4 times before. I'm pretty sure they know how many stabs it takes to kill somebody.
Yes.
So why they would stab this guy one time, okay, and then leave him and assume he's going to be dead. 2, leave him out in the open. If anyone pulls into that parking lot, they will see a body laying in the doorway of the hotel. They didn't even bother moving him. Like, you could have just dragged him the 2 feet back in the room and closed the door.
Yes, they're very cocky in their confidence.
Right. But again, but earlier they were moving stuff around.
Yep.
Like, so they're obviously conscious of it at that point. It's just like at the end, towards the end, they just like gave up. This is before the guys were dead. You know what I mean? This is before all that kind of stuff, because like one of those guys stabbed him.
Right.
So like all of that stuff happened with his body just laying there and then just left it there. It's just bizarre to me. Doesn't make sense. Anyway, that's all I got.
Yeah. The hotel where you have to sleep with your shoes on and clothes on. Yeah, that's never fun. The thing that, okay, I don't feel that I could be completely mistaken, but when you go into that tunnel and you see rats, right? Like, I feel like your fear response isn't going to be, oh, rats, is I'm going to be fucking killed. Don't worry about the rats.
You know, but maybe they have a phobia of rats. I mean, it didn't stop them.
I know, but like, it does, don't scream because of the rats. Like, I wouldn't be concerned about rats at that point in time. Like, rats are the least.
Maybe he knows that she has a fear of rats.
Maybe.
And that's why he said that.
They seem very surprised that the tunnel would lead like to the places it led. Like, to the guy's office. Like, okay, like, you have to know, right? And you've talked about, like, going to the, like, you know there's people using it. Like, they're very surprised by, like, the places they went to the tunnel. Like, where else would the tunnel lead? You think it's going to lead to safety? No. They're not having this tunnel that leads to safety. They're using it for themselves. The idea of, like, I would say that Luke Wilson's character figured out pretty damn quickly that it is their room that they're in. Now, Grant, we didn't see the other rooms, but I'd also argue that like all those rooms at the hotel would look pretty much the same. I feel like he got to that conclusion pretty quickly.
Well, I mean, it was a noticeable thing. You know what I mean? Like there's like, cause the room is like 30 years old.
Yeah.
Right. The design in there, like the wall scroll work, the fucking goofy ass, like lattice stuff that was all in there. That's like, you know, 70s type shit. It wouldn't take you long to realize that it's the same 70s type bullshit in that room on the tape that is in the room you are in.
Like I said, I don't know. Maybe my thought process was it could have been another room there or something similar, because let's face it, a lot of these hotels look the same.
Yeah, but they were in a corner room.
That's true.
And again, they had the same blankets. It's the same carpet, the same colors, the same TV. I mean, everything is the same, and they're seeing it from multiple angles. So, like, as they're looking at it, he's like, this is this room. Like, like this is, you know, it's not, it's, again, if it was like a modern day hotel room, yeah, it would be kind of hard to tell.
Right.
Because they all look the same. But if you were in a hotel and it looks like it's from 1975, you're going to notice.
Yeah. That's fair. You know, before all that knocking happened, I think I would have gotten out of there well before that point in time.
Well, the knocking would be enough for me.
Yeah.
Like if they knocked like crazy like that, I went and complained to the manager, came back to the room. They're not going to like that again. I'm out.
Oh, yeah.
I would go there and be like, yeah, it's happening again. Are you not doing anything? Did you not try to do anything? Because obviously we can't sleep if this is going to happen. So either you're party to it or this is bullshit. And either way, I'm leaving.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. They stuck around way too long.
Yeah. And again, even after they like figured out what was happening, they ran back into that room. Which I was like, that's unforgivable. You now know that that is a murder room.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like, you need to get the fuck out of there.
Yep. Oh, yeah, for sure. And, okay, so him living, right? That point of him living, you're like, okay, I agree. They should know what it's like for someone to die. They've done it enough. They know what he's dead. I honestly feel like him living was a reshoot. Like, there's some test audience that goes, well, he said he was going to be okay, and he's not. So he should be okay.
Lied.
You know what I mean, though? Like, it felt like he was dead. And then test audience would go, well, I don't want this bad ending where he's dead. So you need to change it. And that's what it felt like to me.
Hmm.
Which we know that there's been cases of movies where people go, and I don't like this bad ending. I want a happy ending. And let's face it, in this situation, I had no reason to believe they were going to survive this. These people have been doing it fucking who knows how long.
Well, that's why this is their story and not the story of the other people who died there.
I know. But you know what I mean? Like, it just felt like an add-on later on that's like, okay, now he's dead, bleeding out the gut, but staying outside, you know, he's fine. It just didn't fit. I felt with the tone of the rest of the movie. That's what I have. So our olives this week is ineffective stabbings, primarily because of this movie.
Well, there's stabbings in every movie that don't do what they're supposed to do.
That's true. Yeah. Chainsaws, hatchets, axes. So number of ineffective stabbings on 10. Salem, why don't you go first? What's your rating out of 10?
Now this is pretty good. It's a pretty good movie. It's better than I remembered it.
Mm-hmm.
Which is not saying, I guess there's a lot of bad movies in between there. but it's better than I remember it. I mean, there's some significant logic holes here, but it's still pretty good. I'm going to go for, 6.75.
Yeah, I mean, this is, you know, it's something I forgot about, too, that now is not saying it's a bad movie, but I watched it once. But it's not something that you need to watch very often, but like I said, at least once, right? Just to appreciate what this thing is, because I don't feel like it's talked about anymore. I don't know anyone that talks about this movie, which is interesting, because the premise is there that we should be like, okay, this is a... interesting premise, right? And maybe it could have been a franchise. Maybe it could have been better than, you know, The Strangers Chapter 2, whatever that movie title was, right? But I will give this a solid 7 ineffective stabbings out of 10. It's good. It serves its purpose, right? And I think it does it well. So it was an enjoyable watch for me. All right. Next up is The Green Room from 2016. Take it away, Salem.
Just Green Room. There's no the.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
To be careful with this alphabetical order stuff. But yeah, Green Room, starring the late Anton Yelchin. But anyway, this there's a bunch of people you probably know in there. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think, most of the other band members you probably wouldn't know if you saw Arrested Development.
Correct.
The girl guitar player is maybe from Arrested Development. She's been in other things, but that's primarily what I know her from. The other guys, they're in stuff, but you know, not big name stuff.
Right.
Anyway, so essentially, they're an old school punk band touring the country in their shitty van. Right. That's the whole thing that they're doing. And they're like super broke, so they're like literally siphoning gas to like get by.
Mm-hmm.
So they have a show set up. They go to this place. The guy, you know, gives them their, you know, his room for the night, like the promoter guy. And the next morning they talk. He basically says, yeah, sorry, the show is canceled because his last show got out of hand. They pulled his permit. He can't do shows anymore. So the show is canceled. He's like, you guys were already on our way. You know, there's nothing I could do. But I do have a backup for you, which is like they play lunchtime at like a Mexican restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't get very much money and they're very upset because now they don't have enough money to even get home. You know, they have no other shows. They just want to get home and they're in Oregon. Right.
Yeah.
But they're from DC. So they have to get all the way across the country on like the $60 that they got from this, you know,
and rice and beans.
Right. Yeah. So they have the food to make it, but they don't have the gas money to make it. So, you know, the one guy gets angry. The drummer gets angry and like kind of threatens him. And he's like, all right, well, hold on. Let's see what I can do. I'll talk to my cousin. And so he comes back. He's like, okay, I got the show with my cousin, but you got to be a little careful. They're like, boots and braces, which is code for skinheads. Right. So he's like, yeah, you just don't talk a lot about stuff and you'll be fine. He's like, my cousin is a good guy. You talk to him, he'll tell you like, you know, what to do, but you get good money. Like they're going to get like $350, which to them is like significant money.
Oh yeah.
So they're like, okay, we'll go do that. So they drive basically out to like the middle of fucking rural nowhere. It's like in the middle of a forest and there's like a kind of like a bar, you know, open venue area. So they go in there. They talk to, you know, Daniel, who is kind of a shit dude, mm-hmm. but he, you can tell he's like at least a little bit okay because he's like, all right, you keep your shit under wraps. You don't talk about my cousin. You don't talk about anybody. Like, you know, you play your fucking show, you get your shit, you get out. You know,
play your heavier stuff too.
Right, yeah. Play heavy stuff, like just play your shit, get your money, get the fuck out. Like, you know, we know this is not your kind of place, but hey, you can play, just get out. So, right. You know, they go in the green room and they quickly figure out that there's like white power stickers and shit everywhere. Like, oh shit, this is a fucking Nazi bar, right?
And they do the smartest thing possible.
Yeah, they do the smartest thing possible, but also, again, they're a punk rock band. That's punk, very punk rock thing to do. What do? They cover the Dead Kennedys, Nazi punks, fuck off. Of course, that they're very not happy about at first, but then they play a bunch of heavy shit and they eventually win the crowd over, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So they get back into the green room, which is what the movie's named after. They get back in the green room and they're like, oh, all your shit is ready to go. Like all their shit was taken out and packed up. And he's like, all your shit's ready to go. Just like, let's go. Let's get out of here. And she's like, Sam, the guitar player, is like, oh shit, I left my phone in there. And so she just opens the door, grabs her phone. And as she like is just kind of glancing around the room before she leaves, she sees a dead fucking body.
Yep.
So one of the skin bird girls that they saw earlier has a knife sticking out of her head. Well, obviously dead.
Oh, that stabbing was quite effective.
Yes. Right. So it's like, oh shit. Right. You know, she like just runs out like, oh, we didn't see nothing. So the guy, you know, that's kind of running the bar at the time freaks out and is like, okay, well, you guys got to stay here. So They basically corral them into the green room with the body and all, and the other band that was waiting to play. So obviously somebody from this band just did this, right? Yep. Like, this is what's going on here. So it's like, yeah, the one girl got stabbed in the head. Her, like, friend, also Skinbird with the goofy Skinbird haircut, played by Imogen Poots, who's probably next to Anton Yelchin. Well, I wouldn't say she's number three, right? Because the big reveal is coming up in a minute.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they're basically like, yeah, nobody's going anywhere. We got to figure this shit out. So they're like, you know, they have this big dude to guard them who has a gun. And he's like, everybody sit down. We're going to figure this out. And so they're like, oh, shit. You know, they're all like, well, we didn't see anything. Let's just get the fuck out of here. And then out of the, you know, the other side is like, oh, let's call the fucking cops. Right. So they tried to call the cops. So that's, again, that's their problem, is they called the cops. So now the guys like had to call back saying, yes, there was a stabbing, and they had to like figure something out. So as they're trapped in the green room, outside of the green room, they get like two Nazi dudes to stab each other.
Yep.
So when the cops get there, they say, oh yeah, here's the stabbings, whatever. You know, all this is, you know, worked out, you know, here, take these guys away. We're done. So they leave. The cops don't find out what really happened, and they're now trapped in this room. So, the other band then goes, oh, it's your guys' turn to play. So the other band just gets up and goes out to play their set. you know, one of which fucking murdered this girl. You know, and he right. very intense is like, oh, what was, you know, your second to the last song? And he's like, you know, they told him the name of it. And he's like, yeah, it was a great song. I killed her to that song. And they're like, yep. Wow. So they, yep. you know, they leave, they go out, they play their fucking set. They're now basically, so it's their band. Imogen Poots, the friend, you know, the Skinbird friend, and then Big Justin with the gun, the guy guarding them. So as the cops are leaving, the owner of the whole facility shows up, who is Patrick Stewart, which is like, I guess, the biggest name in this film.
Yeah.
So he plays like a Nazi owner guy of this whole thing, like the leader of their movement, I guess. He seems to be like a very highly regarded figure by all the other skinheads that were there.
Yeah.
So he kind of talks the cops down and then tries to talk the band down. They're like, oh yeah, you know, we'll get everything done, we'll get everything sorted out, like trying to be the voice of reason. And of course they're all panicked and freaked out, right?
Oh,
and
yeah,
by this time, yeah, like Patrick Stewart says, yeah, the cops have come and gone already. The cops are not going to get involved in this. Like, we're trying to figure out a way out of this. You know, what do we do? And so essentially, because of the panic, they end up, you know, the drummer guy is actually like a jiu-jitsu expert, apparently.
Sure.
And he like puts an arm bar on Big Justin, and they get his gun. And so now Big Justin is now have been taken out. They have the gun, and they're like, you know, basically demanding, you know, that the cops come. They realize that the cops aren't coming. So they're trying to figure out what they can, you know, get, because they're trying to get him. We got to get rid of the gun. You got to get rid of the gun. You know, Patrick Stewart is telling him this, and they're like,
yeah. Okay. Unregistered gun, yeah.
Right, yeah, like, okay, well, you know, what are we going to do? So he's like, oh, can we trade the gun for a phone? They're like, nope. So, like, essentially, they just kind of decide to give them the gun as, like, a peace offering kind of thing. So they go to give them the gun. They're watching, like, through the, you know, the kind of vent on the bottom of the door. It looks like there's only one person there. And then as soon as he opens the door to hand the gun out, you see other boots come in with their red laces, and poor Anton Yelchin gets his arm, like, I don't know, butchered up.
Almost, his hand almost cut off.
Yeah, like his hand is literally like flopping on a thread. Like it's bad. Like his arm is fucked. And at this point, they managed to get the door closed. But at this point, they kind of realized, okay, we're not going to get out of here. Like, this is not going to go well. Like, that we're going to get killed. And now we don't have a gun. At this, you know, they're trying to like fuck with them. They end up turning the power off. And then, you know, outside of that, oh, the power's off. Sorry, everybody. The show is over. You guys got to all go home. And so they give the other band, you know, the ones that killed the girl, they give them a bunch of drugs so that, oh, you guys go to your safe house and then, you know, just wait for further instructions. So everybody leaves. So they're all alone now It's all the skinheads, the diehard like skinheads that are part of like this gang, and then everybody in the green room. So while the power was out, they discover that there's like something underneath the floor. So they break through the floor and they find out that there's like a heroin lab underneath the building. unfortunately there's nothing down there to help them. I guess nothing. They're not chemists. Right? Yeah. So like, I'm sure you can figure out how to use a bomb out of some of that shit, but I wouldn't know how to do that. I guess they don't know either. Right. But there's literally nothing there. They can't open the door to get out. There's no vents big enough to climb out. They get nothing out of this other than they know that now this is not just about a dead body. This is also about protecting their drug empire. Like this is a real like organized crime thing. Like we're screwed. They end up getting in a kind of a battle with Big Justin again, and they end up killing him with a box cutter. Like literally the one guy, the jiu-jitsu guy, chokes him out and the girl like just cuts his belly.
How do you know he's out? Slice.
She just like takes a box cutter and slices from like literally like groin up to chest along his stomach, and he's now very dead. So they kind of, you know, stack it up and they're like, you know, what are we going to do? And so they've kind of figured out that there's nobody outside the door. There's, you know, like, well, we got to try to get out of here. There's no other way to do this. Right. So they kind of like stack up whatever they have, you know, as weapons, which is like, you know, pieces of the ceiling and shit. You know, they don't have like real weapons, like a fluorescent light bulb. And anyway, so they go out to try to like escape. They get attacked by people, in the lobby, and the one guy has like attack dogs. So the singer guy gets attacked by a dog and dies. The drummer guy, who is the jiu-jitsu expert, tries to climb out a window. He gets stabbed to death and dies. So Anton Yelchin kind of like fights back a little bit and saves Imogen Poots. And then so him, Sam, and Imogen Poots are now the only ones left in the room
after one attack. Yeah,
right. After one attack, so they lose. Everybody else is gone. Well, I guess it was just two more of them, but whatever. So it's just them now. So they realize that, you know, they can't really leave because they're just gonna like wait in ambush outside. Like, what do they do?
Mm-hmm.
So again, they you know, kind of set up this ambush where now we got the heavy hitters, and they're like, okay, this is going too long. Like, our plan is not going to work unless we kill them soon. You know, don't shoot them, you know, because that's not our plan. But I guess if you have to, you have to.
And group it together. So, right. Because you're picking the slugs out.
Right. Yeah. Like, yeah. So, like, again, like, if you actually shoot them, yeah, it's whatever. So they all go in. They're going to, you know, take them out. And they send in Daniel, who was the guy that was the cousin, their contact. And, like, some other, like, kind of baby face looking skinhead dude.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, they go in there, they open the door, but Daniel doesn't want to kill them. He's like, okay, what's going on? He wants to talk. And then we basically find out that Daniel was going to leave with the girl who got stabbed. They were going to like leave the gang and go, you know, together somewhere else, right?
Right.
Obviously, they found out about that. That's why the one guy stabbed her in the head. But they didn't, they know she was leaving with somebody, but they didn't know who. And now we know it was that guy. So the other guy that he was with, he goes, you get out of here. So he leaves. So Daniel then stays in there with them. So they go outside and he's like, yeah, he's like, Daniel, they just started talking to him and shit. I don't know what's going on. So at that point, they're like, okay, this is probably not good. Daniel was the guy that she was going to leave with. Like, he's considered one of them now.
Mm-hmm.
So they go in and Daniel's like, yeah, okay, let's get the hell out of here. He's like, yeah, he's like, I know this place. I can get us out of here. You know, he's like, there's one thing that, you know, they don't know. I know. And he's like, well, what's that? And he's like, I know where the boom. And he gets shot in the head with a shotgun. So they don't know what they're fucking talking about. But they end up taking the shotgun away from the guy. They end up killing that guy. But again, they now have a shotgun. But though they get basically beaten back to the room again. But I think Sam dies too at this point. Yeah.
Yep.
So Sam dies too. So now it's just Anton Yelchin and Imogen Poots, right? So they basically, they're locked back in there and they're like, shit, you know, what are we going to do? Like, you know, how are we going to get out of this? So they basically decide to send in, you know, two other guys to like mop it up. And then the other, the leader guy who's apparently just like earned his stripes and became a real boy, right?
Yeah.
The guy who was kind of like in charge of things before, the kind of short dopey dude. He was in charge before Patrick Stewart showed up. But anyway, he goes in and he's literally has to mop it up. Like he's got a power washer and he's supposed to like clean up. So they go in to do stuff. They come up with a plan where essentially they're like, they painted themselves up like in camouflage, like they were going to, you know, go to war. And so the guy, one guy breaks in, you know, Anti-Yelchin is like yelling down in the hole and then he like jumps down in there and they're all like, what the fuck is going on? Like, what is happening? Like, I'm gonna go down and get this guy. So they go down there. There's kind of like a back and forth, but anyway, she was hiding in the couch. So the one guy goes down into the heroin lab to chase Anton Yelchin. The other guy's like standing at the edge of the hole, like looking in. She pops out, slits that guy's throat, and takes his gun. And now they're like, you know, they know this guy only has like two shots in the shotgun. They kind of like count him out. They ended up in a big fight. And then they win, right? So they come back up, you know, everybody's now dead. They're in pretty bad shape, but Anton Yelchin and Imogen Poots are still alive. They go and talk to the dopey dude who's like literally with the power washer out there. And he just kind of gives up. He's like, I don't want to be a part of this. He says, I just want to go to jail. Is what he literally said. I don't want to be doing this. I want to go to jail. Like, this is not for me. So he's like, yeah, I'll show you where to go or what to do. And so they go out and they basically find out that their plan is to make it look like the punk kids in the van pulled up to their property and tried to siphon gas out of their cars. And they were attacked by his attack dogs because that's where they live.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's how they died, is they were attacked by dogs.
No trespassing sign.
Yeah. Right. They have no trespassing and beware of dog signs, whatever. So that was their plan. And so they basically get to the site. They see like they're trying to stage this. So they see like their friends literally being chewed up by dogs and shit. And they basically fight back and kill them all.
Yep.
So yeah, they kill the guy who owns the dogs. They kill Patrick Stewart. They kill the other Nazi guy that was left. And then it's just the two of them left, and then they're like gonna leave. There was a kind of like an ongoing thing in the movie where they were asking like what your desert island band was, and in the beginning of it, the funny thing was is, you know, they were trying to be as punk rock as possible, right? So everybody was like naming these like punk rock bands or deep punk rock influence bands, right? And then like later on in the film, when they all kind of realize shit is going all downhill, they change their minds and they all start saying what their real favorite bands are. You know, like one guy says Prince, you know, which is like, again, if you're punk rock and you like Prince, that's like, you know, something wrong with you.
Right.
Anyway, so they're all like, you know, doing that kind of stuff. But both times Anton Yelchin, he doesn't have an answer. He doesn't know. And so at the very end of the film, you know, he's like, I figured it out. I know what my, you know, what my desert island band is. And Imogen Poots is like, yeah, no one cares.
Yep.
And then that's how that's the end of the movie.
Yes. I mean, what was your first thoughts when you saw this? I know you watched this, you know, well before me, and we actually watched together a couple of years ago for the first time, seeing it.
Well, yeah, because I heard that you hadn't seen it. Yeah. So I was like, you should see it. It's good.
Yep.
Yeah, I don't remember the first time I saw it. I know it was like it came up. I don't know if I was searching through something on streaming or if I was like reading an article. I just don't remember how I heard of it. I just know that I watched it and I thought it was fantastic. I thought it was great.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that again. When I heard you didn't hear it, I was like, no, you got it. You got to watch.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, like. You know, there's some things that, you know, the wife doesn't want to watch. You know, I think she had it in her head, Green Room, Green Inferno, same thing. So she never wanted to watch it. And after we had watched it together, well before we started doing the podcast even, like, I think that week, I think I said this last time, is like, I watched this with my wife. So I watched it twice in 1 week. you know, the first time and then the rewatch, right? And watching this again, like, it is a solid story. You know, it's realistic. It's not like grotesque body horror that you think of, like an Eli Roth type movie. But it is visceral, right? You have that gut reaction, like, this is bad. And this movie fits perfectly in with this theme. So I love it for that. Do you want to start with your highlights?
Sure.
Okay.
It's old school punk, right? This is mm-hmm. like the punk that I like.
Correct.
Like, when people say punk, this is what I think of. I know a lot of people have different things and they think of that, and that's, you know, punk's fault itself because it fractured into so many different subgenres and shit, but
right.
But that's the kind of music that I think of when I think of punk, is what they play and what they like, not the Nazi stuff. But you know what I mean? That's what I, yeah. This is what I think of. And I thought it was great. And the music, well, I should say, the music that wasn't Nazi music was great. And a fun soundtrack before that point. Mm-hmm. The cast is great. Again, I'm a big fan of Imogen Poots. I know she's not in a lot of stuff, but I do like what she's in. I mean, yeah, poor Anton Yelchin died before I think he was going to be a pretty big star.
Oh, easily.
Because he had already done some pretty star power level stuff. Mm-hmm. And he showed that he had a lot of range, and I think he was going to do well, and unfortunately ended before it could get as far as it should have gone. I think it ended before his time. Then of course Patrick Stewart, right? I mean, Patrick Stewart is playing way against type in this film.
Yeah.
I mean, like, you know, I've seen him in other kinds of roles, but never like a scumbag fucking Nazi leader. And like, he's still not like acting like a redneck asshole or anything like that. He still has his like dignity, but you can tell it's like a twisted dignity, right? Like, yeah, he's a like a cult leader or like a gang leader, you know what I mean? You can feel that kind of shitty cult energy off him.
But he's intelligent, manipulative. He is like a dangerous person.
Right. Yeah. And again, he has absolute control over his followers, which is fucked up.
Right.
But you can really feel that bad energy off him, which is, again, saying a lot from Patrick Stewart, because that's not the kind of role that he plays. But I do like the suspense and pacing in this one is great. You know, the lead up to, like, you know, things keep getting worse and worse and worse, you know, and they keep ending up back in the fucking room, you know, and like every time they end up back in the room, there's less people than there was last time they left the room. Like, it happens multiple times. Like, they don't just sit in there like waiting for something to happen. They try to get out. They try to do what they can to get out. They just get foiled, right? Like, multiple times. And it's, I think it does a great job of, you know, showing that the spirit of like wanting to live, but, you know, not having the ability to, and again, I did like the ending that all the Nazis died. That was fun. Because I don't like Nazis. I don't know if you're a big Nazi fan, but I know I'm not.
No, I don't like big Nazis.
But that's all the high points I get.
The punk life. Right. It's like it shows it not in the glamorous way. Like, I feel like this movie is one of those movies that show like that punk lifestyle, like, realistically. Right. You know, that you have like, obviously you and I have different ideas of punk bands that we listen to. You're the first generation. I'm second or third wave. Right. But I think, like, you know, SLC punk shows it, you know, a bit too, but I think this shows the grittier side of it. So I appreciate that for it. And kind of, I feel like they did their research too with punk bands, right? They're not saying like Offspring, Green Day, they're doing deep cuts.
Well, again, this is real punk. I'm not trying to be shitty to you at all. I'm just saying, like, this is real punk. Like, this is where it started. Like, all these stuff came later. Like, Green Day, it's all poppy stuff. Like, this is all stuff that was, like, they were trying to sell punk to the masses, and it got watered down.
Right.
That's essentially what it is. So, yeah, like, that stuff happened later. They're trying to stay true to it. They're trying to stay true to the point where they won't even have social media for their band, because they think it's going to influence them in some way.
All right. They're playing music to play music.
Correct.
Yeah. That's fantastic. As he said to before, Patrick Stewart was absolutely amazing in this role. Like, you felt like you've never seen, I feel like I've never seen him in a role like this before.
Really? No. I mean, I've seen him in like a villain role, but he still kind of plays the same kind of character, just like with an evil twist on it. This is like a different, for sure.
He's like calculated and just like scary.
Right. Right.
So I think he nails it, and everyone else does nail it too. So I appreciate all the acting in this. And it, like the, I don't want to call it body horror, but like the tailing of the, you know, tearing of the throats, and Anton's arm is just fucked up. You're going, that is like, how's he ever gonna use it? Yeah, he, you know, duct tape, but shit, man, that's his, like, only just like tendons were hanging off his hand.
Well, yeah, like, yeah, that hand is not going to be used for much.
No. And I agree, the suspense leading up to it, you just go, you know, you walk into that room like, oh shit, they just stabbed someone. Like, fuck, what do we do? Like, I'm not sure anyone would be good in that situation. Period.
No. I mean, what are you going to do? Like, you're in a place you don't know. Yep. Around a whole shit ton of people you don't know. Yep. And you witness something you know you're not supposed to see. Like, what do you do? There is no answer to that.
Right.
Run is probably the best thing you can come up with, but I mean, that still takes thought processes that probably didn't have at that time.
Correct. So, yeah. I'll roll into my low points. Obviously, Nazis.
Yeah. The Nazi punks are that, well, not to anger anybody. Well, I don't think I'm going to anger anybody, but Nazi punks are the worst ones to me. Like, yeah. Punk music is not about Nazi shit. It never has been.
No.
It's about fighting against, you know, the establishment, and Nazis are very much the establishment. So I don't get that whole thing.
Yeah.
But whatever.
It doesn't really play into this, but the cojones to play that song they played as their first song, like you're gonna get shot.
But that's when you know they're for real. You know what I mean? They're like, that's some real shit. That is like, you're a bunch of scrawny fucking punk kids, and you're gonna play Nazi punks fuck off at a white power bar.
Yeah.
That
to me, that's stupid.
That too, yeah. But like, that means you're true to yourselves and what you stand for, and fucking doesn't matter what happens.
I don't think I'd be able to do that. There's no way.
Well, I don't know how to play, but
no.
Well, I might if I thought everybody was on board, and I thought I had a chance in a fight if one erupted. In that place, no, because there's like 100 skinheads and then 4 little scrawny punk kids. There's no way.
Yeah, that bad idea, regardless.
Right.
You know, poor dogs, right? Not being trained for that life sucks for them, right?
Yeah, dog fighting. I don't get the whole dog fighting thing, man. I would rather watch people fight.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, I would rather watch people, like, you know, gladiator fight than watch dog fights. Like, yeah. I wonder what would happen if I could come up with, like, gladiator fights, like underground gladiator fighting.
There you go.
But I would feel less bad for that, because humans are fully capable of reasoning, right? Yeah. Like, they made the choice to be there. A dog does not. You know, it's just, it's trained, it's treated a certain way, and it responds accordingly. That's it.
Right. And you also feel, like I said, I feel bad for the dogs being trained into that spot. I feel bad for the dogs having to not be fed and, you know, also getting attacked by people. Like, it's not their fault. None of it is their fault.
Right. Yeah, it's not their fault. But again, they're also, because of the way that they were trained, they're dangerous. And that's sucks.
Yeah.
I agree with you. It sucks a lot. But it's just, yeah, that's just the way it goes.
Yeah. And the poor guys that never really figure out what's going to happen, like, get their laces. Oh yeah, I'm just going to jail. Guy's like, I got a way out. Boom, dead. Like, it just shows, like, it's a fucked up situation.
Yeah, again, it's like every time you think they got some hope, it's like, nope, crushed every time.
Yep. So, that's all I got. What are your low points?
I also have Nazi punks on my list. Imagine that.
Weird.
Now, okay. I don't fucking care where I'm at. If somebody tells me the gun you have is unregistered, I am not giving that gun up. I don't give a fuck. Because if it's unregistered, that means you were planning to shoot us with it.
Mm-hmm.
Which means I know my life is in danger. This is the only tool I have in my arsenal right now. You can go fuck yourself. What would be the purpose? I'm not saying they did anything wrong. You're in a panic mode, right? You're trying to get things to calm down. You're trying to get the fuck out of there alive. I get it. I'm not criticizing their choice. I'm just saying, me personally, no fucking way I would give you the gun. No way. There's nothing that you could do to convince me.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the phone, but as soon as they said, nope, that's not happening, I know they're going to kill me. Because why else would they not want me to have a phone?
Oh, yeah, easily.
So, yeah, no, fuck that. I don't know why they gave it up. And of course, I mean, you know, things ended up the way they did, but I would not have given up that gun. Let them kick down the fucking door when they know I have a gun.
Exactly.
But yeah, man, that the arm and the belly shots... are just rough. I mean they're just like, they're like bizarrely realistic, right? Because it's like body horror scenes in an otherwise not body horror movie, right?
Oh yeah.
So they're just kind of like, oh shit, and then they just move on. There's not much you can do about it. But yeah, I don't know, I guess it's on the bad side because it made me feel bad, but it was done well. How about that?
Oh yeah, yeah.
I will say, I got the dogs on here too. We already talked about that. One of that, the ending, is it too drawn out? You know what I mean? Is it too long? It kind of feels like it goes on a little too long.
Yeah,
like after they get out, you know, like after there's the kind of, to me, it feels like the climax is them like finally getting out of the room, right? So it's like Anton Yelchin and Imogen Poots finally get out of the room, finally get out of the building. And then it's like, after that, it feels like it's kind of on a decline, right? It's like, it's already hit the climax and it keeps going down. And I feel like that, it just kind of dragged that part out a little too much. Because they're like walking through the woods. They're like talking to each other, talking to the guy. You know what I mean? They find one group of people and then they're like, oh, okay. And then they move on and find a second group of people. Like, they're not even all in the same group. I just feel like it could have been a little shorter. But that's it. That's all I, got there.
Okay. So number of ineffective stabbings. I will go first. This is a fantastic movie. I don't know if there's anything you can really do to make it better, quite honestly. So I will give this a solid 9.25 out of 10. How about you?
I agree. This is a fantastic movie. It is a 9 from me as well. 9 ineffective stabbings out of 10. But the most important question here is, you ready? Mm-hmm. What is your desert island band?
I mean, I'm not saying it just because of this movie. You know my favorite band of all time, right?
I mean, I do.
It's Bad Religion.
I'm so shocked.
I know, right? It's a band I've seen at least, I think, a dozen times. And, you know, I want to do more. Obviously, you know, I have a tattoo of their Crossbuster on me as well. It's something that I could just listen to all the time. And
you know, a big tattoo of Greg Raffin on your butt.
You know it. And I was thinking about, like, yeah, do I like nu metal? Do I like El Nino? Do I like a lot of other stuff? Yes, I do. But I kind of got to be in the mood to listen to it, right? It's not something I just listen to all the time. They're like, I'm in my car, it comes up. Like, you know what? I don't feel like listening to this. I'm just going to go into the next song. But Bad Religion is something I can listen to all day, every day, quite honestly. So I guess the question is, what is your desert island band?
I'll choose one that's kind of two, right? Because you get a bonus band. So my favorite would be Joy Division, because I like punk a lot and I also like goth a lot, and I feel like Joy Division is kind of the perfect mix of the two. Even though, yes, it technically is post-punk, that is the official genre it's in, and it's before goth was even around, before goth was even a thing. So it, like, bands around this time is what moved into goth, but I feel like it's a perfect middle point and I like it a lot. But the bonus is that if you just get Ian Curtis, the singer, to stand aside, now you have New Order. And now you can have 80s synth music. So you can have the moody, you know, post-punk, you know, gothy type stuff. And then if you feel like it's synth music, you just, Ian Curtis, please stand aside, let Bernard sing. And then there you go. Now you got New Order. So it's like you get two for one.
Yeah, it's a hard question. You know, do I ever say Prince? No, I could never say Prince. I don't like Prince, so that's just me.
I mean, I like some Prince, but he's not a guy I would want to be on a desert island, especially because he's not alive.
Well, that too.
Neither is Ian Curtis, though, so I'm not. I guess it's not a requirement, but.
Yeah, there you go. All right, so last up for this episode, we have VFW from 2020, which we both watched for the first time yesterday, this recording. And we'll probably tag team this one because, let's face it, there's not a lot that happens.
No, I mean, it's the same kind of thing where people are in a room. Things are happening to the room. They try to get out of the room and ultimately fail, and then at the end they succeed.
Yeah. So essentially it is, we'll get, say the intro right now is very 80s.
80s action intro where they give you a thinly veiled paragraph trying to explain why the things that happen in this film are okay.
Yeah. Essentially there's a new drug called hype that is essentially turns people, I'd say, into zombies. Well, I also really describe
super,
it.
Super junkies.
Super junkies. Yeah. So that is all going on there. We're introduced kind of like to the main guy who's like supplying all the vibe, I would say.
Boz, right? Well, at least in their area, yes.
Yeah. So, you know, we get into their world and there's just, everyone's just drugged out of their minds and not a good world, right? Then we're introduced to, starting off some of the rest of the cast where we have a bunch of old guys who, you know, have a VFW. You know, we have Stephen Lang, we have William Sadler, we have can't remember the other guy's name.
Fred Williamson.
Fred Williamson, yeah. So just a bunch of older David guys.
Patrick
that,
Kelly.
Yeah, there you go. That were
Martin,
either
Martin Cove.
That were either in Vietnam or the Korean War. Right.
Yeah, I think one of them was supposed to be in Korea and they said the oldest one. And I'm like, you're all fucking old. Like, which one was it? I know it's not Stephen Lang because he specifically said he was in Nam.
Right.
And I don't think it was William Sadler because he was talking about serving with him. So he had to have been from Nam too. So I don't know who the fuck was in Korea.
I think it was the used car salesman.
Oh, I think it was David Patrick Kelly. I think he's like the oldest.
I mean, he is.
So I think it was supposed to be him. But
he looks the oldest.
Yeah.
So anyway, the others kind of, you know, realizing what they want to do. It's Stephen Lang's character's birthday. They're like, all right, we're, you know, drink for a while here at the VFW, and then we're gonna go to the titty bar. All while that's going on there, a guy is, like I said, running his drug empire out of a old movie theater, and
across the street.
Across the street, you know, the town's gone to shit, right? It's, let's just say, we'll say it right now, it's very hobo with a shotgun.
Well, it's just, yeah, it's 80s action vibe.
Yeah. So while that's going on there, a girl's like, yeah, I'm getting this fixed, and the guy tosses off the balcony, she chases after it and falls down, and well, then her sister goes, this is bullshit, and just takes all the drugs from the open safe. About like 4 or 5 bricks of this blue hype drug. Anyway, as she's being chased down by the zombie junkies or super junkies, she happens to go into the VFW as she's being chased, and then that's where all the chaos starts to ensue. Essentially it then becomes a movie between the guy who is running the drug den, essentially trying to get his drugs back, and starts sending his army of super junkies to go there and attack. Like I said, very zombie-like. And then it just becomes the old guys, plus a guy who just came back from tour, protecting the VFW and protecting the girl from who knows what. They don't know why she's there. You'll find out a little bit later, but essentially because, you know, she has the drugs and it's her sister that jumped off the balcony. So Q finding random weapons to start killing the junkies with. You know, the oldest guy gets an axe to the shoulder as he's dying on the bar, right? And like I said, just lots of practical effects being done with body kills, axes, and stuff like that, you know. And they have a couple different waves of being attacked. Eventually, you know, the old guys start to, you know, die a little bit. I'm trying to remember who dies first.
George Went, I believe, dies first.
yes, they're trying to figure out a way to get out of there. Like, I'm gonna get my truck, we're gonna get out of here. George is like, all right, I think the coast is clear, and then boom, stabbed to death.
Right.
Throat cut. Like, oh shit, you know, that's not good. And so they're just trying to figure out ways to get out of there, because their friend who got, like, you know, the axe to the neck is slowly down, like, we gotta get out of here. So we get a little bit more back and forth with the girl trying to talk about who she is, what she's doing. Then she goes, well, you know, they know that you have the drugs, and well, now that you're involved with this, because, you know, one of the guys that broke in there was the drug lord's brother, right? Like, they're not only going to kill, you know, you, even if you give it back, you're screwed. He's going to kill you, period. So they're trying to figure out how to kind of like, you know, make a last stand and also get out to the truck to be able to get their friend to the hospital. So they had a couple more rounds of attacks where I think another guy gets, you know, a couple injuries happen. And so, you know, after all this stuff, the used car salesman goes like, you know what, let me negotiate with them. I'm good at that. Right. And it's like, hey, we'll give you your drugs back. Just let my friends go. And he's like, yeah, no. And I know your friend's name is Fred. Yeah, tell him we're going to get you. We're done with this. And bad guy from Cobra Kai, a.k.a. Karate Kid, dies. And so they're like, oh, shit. They're going to have one last raid against the VFW. And so they start doing the classic, I'd say, 80s action montage of making weapons with whatever you can find at the VFW, including tennis balls with matches in it,
which are filled with some kind of explosive device, but they never explain what it is.
And they never show it either. No. They just show, here's matches and a tennis ball.
And they show them building multiple of them, but they only ever used one. So,
and it's a time release explosion.
Yeah.
So anyway, as the kind of, let's say, the final attack starts to happen, Stephen Lane gets shot in the leg. He's kind of limping, and they're trying to make a run for the truck. And just like I said, all out, think of like good old 80s action and even slasher practical effects of everything just kind of happening, right? Trying to think of other really big things happen other than attacks, but essentially, the guy that was hit with the axe, he dies, and like I said, chaos ensues. And eventually they get to the point where, you know, it's kind of a standoff with the girl and the main guy. He's like getting attacked, and Stephen Lane kind of goes out there. He's like, I'm going to take care of this. But then William Sadler goes, you know what? I've been attacked. I got like a chainsaw to like the neck area. I'm not going to make it. So they have like a final standoff where the girl lights the drugs on fire. And then William Sadler just kind of crashes into him in the truck. He's dead as he explodes. You know, they get back into the VFW. The Williamson's like, oh, I'm not dead. I'm still alive. And then he kind of just dies after saying, I'm still alive. And so Steve Ling survives, and the new guy that came back from the war survives, and the girl survives. Like, oh man, there's still a brick here of this hype. What can we do with it? Oh, we can sell it. We can fix up the VFW. Boom. End of movie. Did I miss anything critical in there?
I don't think so.
Okay.
There's not a whole lot of detail orientation in this film. So.
No. It's just a lot of, like I said, think of 80s action movies, and you got this. So, what was your first thoughts on this after watching it last night?
I think it's made in like the old 80s way. I mean, it has like the whole 80s vibe. I mean, everything is there. I mean, again, I think that's what they were going for. I think they nailed it.
Oh yeah, for sure. I know after the first scene, you're like, oh, this is gonna be your type of movie to me, because of the, I'd say the girl falling off the balcony was kind of a schlocky scene, but.
Well, I mean, it's supposed to be.
Yeah. But it is a good romp, and you're right. It did remind me of Hobo with a Shotgun. It reminded me of, like, Turbo Kid. That same style was done for this movie. So I enjoyed it, though. I'll do my highlights first. Like I said, it definitely felt like the 80s action movie. They did their assignment, they did their research, and they did it to the T. You know, we didn't really even, you know, catch any CGI that we were able to see. Right? It seemed to be all practical effects. You know, to the point where he said if you paused it just right, you'd be able to see, like, the fake head exploding, right? It's just that feel for it. So I do appreciate that. Like, even the soundtrack of it was very 80s. You had some like almost Terminator-esque vibes to some of the theme songs that were there, and it fit right in with that. I would say the acting is not so good, but I think Stephen Lang did the best overall. So I did appreciate his role into all of this. Like I said, it's just a huge love letter to 80s action. Those are my highlights. How about you?
Yeah, I mean, again, I like the whole, the 80s style, the camera, the title cards, the all that stuff was great. I mean, just the attitude. I mean, even the paragraph explaining why there's murder happening in the streets was great. I mean, yeah, they're never fully explain what's going on. They just try to give you enough of an explanation as to like, yep, here it is, figure the rest out yourself. But that's how they did it. I mean, the head explosions were great. I mean, the basically just the FX itself I thought were great. I mean, I didn't see any CGI. I'm sure, I'm not saying there wasn't. But it's not like I saw them saying we'd never use any CGI. I don't know. It didn't look like there was any used, which means it's probably, there's probably used for touch-ups and stuff, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. I don't think any movie with effects gets away with not doing that at all.
Right, yeah.
But it you know, most of it was practical stuff for sure. Mm-hmm. I mean, they even had the action movie outro where it like showed, you know, the characters with their character name and the actor playing them, like, you know, kind of like the, you know, like Predator did. you know what I mean? But movies like that where they kind of give you like that little glimpse of their character, you know, they try to show the character in like the whatever 2 second clip that they show and then put their name. It's all very, you know, it holds the spirit of that well, I thought that well. Mm-hmm. But that's it.
What's your roll to your low points?
Sure. I mean, the truck explosion. I'm not sure what happened there. Like, one truck exploded and then the other one didn't, but somehow that guy died anyway. I guess he was dying anyway. Like, he had a chainsaw wound, so I don't think he was going to live very long otherwise, but it was just like, you know, very big explosion, that's it. All done.
Yep.
There was only like, what, three guns in the whole movie. Yeah. Like they had the shotgun behind the bar that shot sticks of dynamite, apparently. Then the one bad guy had his revolver, and then the the younger ranger guy had an automatic, like a 45. That was it. Those are the only three guns in this whole thing. Like, if you run the streets and you make that much money, how do you not have any more guns? Like, why is everybody using swords and axes and shit? Like what the hell? Is the world, is this like post-apocalypse? Like, it doesn't seem like it. The VFW hall is still there. But again, I mean, it's just kind of an 80s thing where like some movies don't explain it to you. They don't have the budget for it, and they just kind of weave it into the film. I mean, that's kind of how Mad Max happened. It wasn't supposed to be like that, but it's like it ended up being that way because of budget restraints. So it worked out for them. I guess it works out for this too. And again, there's no cops at all.
No.
I mean, like, at all. I mean, again, like, I know if you're in a really bad neighborhood, cops don't like to show up, but like, if there's fucking like gunfire and like bodies littering the streets, like, they'll come. The SWAT team and shit will come and just shoot people and ask questions later for sure. But like, there would be a presence, like, unless the government is completely shut down. And if that was the case, I'm pretty sure there wouldn't be a bunch of old guys drinking at a VFW hall talking about going to a strip club. That seems to be like those things would devolve into madness if there's no government left. That's all I got.
Yeah. I would say that we had two different sides of acting school here, right? We had the old guys that have been acting forever, it seems like, and then the other people that haven't. I think there's a big difference between those two. I thought the VFW guys were pretty good. The other guys, not so much. Time-delayed tennis balls. Said, yes, they obviously filled it with something, right? What that something is, I don't know. They lied it, threw it, got out of the room, waited, and then it exploded.
I mean, I don't know. They had a bunch of chemicals in the bathroom. Maybe they mixed a bunch of chemicals again. They're old war guys. Maybe they know how to make bombs.
Maybe. Maybe. But that's interesting just to have all that stuff in there. So, as you said, though, A's action, never explainable. Just you MacGyver that shit up and it works.
Way it goes, man. If you've ever seen the A-Team, you know how it goes.
Exactly. I like the fact that, you know, they're like, hey, we're going to have this unstoppable, horde of, stoned out people, right? And they'll essentially act like zombies. They're very much zombie-like. To the point where like, oh, I'm going to use this guy's face as a battering ram. Nice. All right, cool. There goes your entire probably stash right there. Like, yes, you have the stash for your money and stuff like that, but then it goes, all your clients are now dead.
I'm pretty sure that wasn't all their clients. Those are just the hangers-on.
I mean, what, 50 of them?
Yeah, but I don't think they were making a lot of money from those guys.
Maybe not.
Those guys are there just to do, like, errands to get free drugs.
Yeah. It's interesting that they're like, how do you know they're users? Well, they have these like weird varicose veins coming from their mouth.
Yep.
So that was an interesting thing. I think this is like a showcase for practical effects because, blood balloons, headshots, it was good, but some of them were cheesy effects. Like, the opening one of the woman falling from the balcony, she pops like a water balloon. But yet when we see her, she has like no damage to her body. So the effects were good, but it felt very cheesy at times.
Well, man, they ran out of money to build like a whole prosthetic person. So they just they're like, we're going to have to use a regular body. Just pretend like you didn't explode.
Yeah. Yeah. And did Abe die from his wounds that he didn't get, or he died from taking the height?
Yes.
I mean, we talked about this too. It's just like, here's this unknown drug in a brick. Let me just take a handful of it and shove it into my face and see what happens. I wouldn't be surprised if he just didn't die right then and there from that drug. So, that's what I have. How many ineffective stabbings out of 10 do you give this?
I like this movie. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. I don't think I love it, but I do like it a lot. But I'll give it a
7.5. 7.5. Yeah, it is an interesting movie. I know this is the love letter to your 80s action. And it, like I said, and it is clearly a low budget movie, right? Like I said, practical effects were great. Story was great. It was funny at times too, so I did laugh. I said it felt right in line with the 80s. So I will give this 7 ineffective stabbings out of 10. It's something you have to watch at least once. If nothing else, for an homage to what the 80s were like, to what practical effects can do. And I, you know, we looked up the guy that this is like his only feature film he's made, right?
Well, the writer, well, because there's two writers credited. One didn't have anything that I could find, and the other one mainly does children's books. So I was like, okay, but yeah, no, not people that have done anything that I know about.
Yeah, which is interesting that, yeah, this was a couple of years ago, but. If he's able to make more in this style, you think the guy would, because he did it well.
Yeah, but again, it may not, you know, have won or gotten enough money, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you never know.
And I don't think I'd ever heard this movie until we started the research for this episode. Do you recall it hearing about this or seeing it anywhere?
No. Again, I had two for the episode, and I was just researching other ones. This one sounded good, but yeah, I hadn't heard of it.
Yeah, so it must have gone under the radar somewhere. But yeah, definitely worth a watch. All right, anything else to add before we wrap this up?
Nope.
All right, so all good things must come to an end. The month of Salem is now done. So now we must make sure we are good boys for Santa as we begin our December holiday-themed month. So join us next time as we sprinkle some roundups with some Christmas horror with The Mean One, Hell on a Shelf, and Red Christmas. As we've done the past two seasons of Christmas time, we're doing some, you know, obviously Christmas-themed horror, holiday-themed stuff. But because October was so rough, we are throwing in some good movies in the mix here for December, so we don't go absolutely insane for the last month like we have past 2 years. So hopefully this will help keep us sane during this time.
We'll see.
We'll see. This first one's going to be rough. Not going to lie. But hopefully the palate cleanser in between will be worth it. So remember, we watch bad movies, so you don't have to. And this has been Graveyard saying, have you checked on the children?
This is Salem saying, long live the new flesh.
Good night.
Night.